Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday morning. First, we do want to thank all of you who contributed to Wisconsin Public Radio during our Wednesday pledge drive. I had a chance to spend the day with many people in Madison, and it was just such a successful drive. Nearly 3,700 members pledged, and we welcomed over 800 new members to Wisconsin Public Radio Association. You donated over $359,000. Isn't that something? To help the networks of Wisconsin Public Radio, your WPR station, and all of the programming, of course, that you depend on. It was a very successful day, and we thank you. We thank you very, very much. This article caught our attention on Tuesday of this week in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Actually, it was yesterday's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Nearly 1,000 full-time staff positions in the Milwaukee public schools, mostly teaching and teacher coach jobs, would be eliminated under a 2012 budget that was proposed on Tuesday of this week. The superintendent, Gregory Thornton, called his proposal one of the most challenging MPS has ever seen, largely because of the proposed state budget that reduces spending on K-12 education. The district is also going to lose an additional $95.5 million in grant funding, and that money covers the cost of programs like math coaches and school nurses. Most of the grant funding loss is because of a drop-off in funding from the federal stimulus package, which was set to last through the end of 2011. We are going to talk about MPS, and we'll also be looking at what's happening with education all around the state. Just to let you know my position, not my position, but my background here, because I'm sure it may come through during the hour. Each of our boys went to MPS, and so we had a stake in MPS. They're graduated now, but had good experiences, certainly, with MPS. As our guest this hour of the program to talk about all of this, this is the president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, Mike Langell. He, in a recent letter, said that we face the greatest challenge in our history. The future of our school system and our union will depend on decisions that will be made this spring. It is no exaggeration, he says, to say MPS may cease to exist as we know it by the end of this school year. Mike, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
It may cease to exist as we know it. What do you mean?
Well, you know, the apparatus is being put in place by the governor and his backers. They're ramping up the vouchers. They're increasing the charter schools, and they're defunding public education and making it more and more untenable to have a school system that is adequately functioning. So they're putting together many pieces of a puzzle that will make it very challenging to keep public education alive in Milwaukee.
I don't know how MPS can deal with the loss of that many teachers and assistants for the fall of next year. That's a lot of positions lost.
Right, we're going to lose 500 teaching positions, 200 educational assistants. So these are human beings who care about kids who will not be in the schools when schools open in September if the governor is allowed to go through with his plans. We are hopeful that people in Milwaukee and around the state can be united to direct the legislature to do the right thing and fund public education properly, not only in Milwaukee, but throughout the state.
Is part of Milwaukee's problem that the union has a contract that goes through 2013?
Well, we have a contract that goes through 2013. We just negotiated that contract this fall, and it included substantial concessions, pay freezes for several years, increased contributions to our health plan. We have a package that included well over $50 million in concessions. And we did that before the governor was elected and before the new law came into place. We anticipated that there'd be financial problems. We did our part and, saw to it that anything we could do to help alleviate what we saw were future problems, we took care of in this bargain.
What immediately will happen with MPS? Will there be a reduction in an increase in class sizes? Will there be not as much busing of students? There obviously will have to be ramifications this fall. What are they?
Well, I think they're going to be larger class sizes. They will remove many of the support educators, math teacher leaders, literacy coaches, curriculum specialists. Those are going. And in addition to that, there'll be cutbacks at every single school. We also had a very successful program, SAGE program, to have lower class sizes at the early levels, early grades. And in many schools, that's being removed. So it is not unusual to have the teaching staffs reduced by one-third in a number of our elementary schools.
You hear from some people, it doesn't make any difference, and there are no studies that show, really, that class size makes a difference in terms of the education a student receives. Do you buy that?
No. I've been a classroom teacher, a high school math teacher, in the Milwaukee Public Schools for over 30 years, and it does make a difference. It's not only is it common sense, but, you know, many of our students come with real lives that are centered on struggling to survive. And what we want to do is be able to have class sizes small enough that we can help these young people. And I think that's one of the big tragedies here, is that many of our neediest youth will be denied access to a quality education. And we're just very hopeful that the citizens of Wisconsin can help the legislature listen to their better angels.
What about this whole movement to go more with charter schools, voucher programs, et cetera? There's a big, as you well know, there's a big push to do a different kind of education in this country. Make the case for public schools.
Well, public schools are for all children, you know, and what we do is we have a social compact with every child in our society. And part of that is that we offer a public education. And what happens when you have vouchers and choice programs, et cetera, they choose the child they wish to teach. And what they do is they remove those that are difficult to reach. They remove those that have special needs. They remove those who have high resource needs also. And the Milwaukee Public Schools, we take all kids. And that's one of the things I've been most proud of, is that whatever the difficulty the young person have, that I've been willing to work with them, and our members have been, and our schools have been also.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do about this? This is something that's going to probably be passed. The budget is going to affect schools in MPS and throughout the state. What are you going to do about it?
Well, we have no choice but to continue to struggle to help our kids. We are going to go to the legislature this spring as they pass their budget. We are going to bear witness to what the right thing is to do. So that's where we're going to be at.
Did you see this coming in any way? There are people who say the idea some conservatives had in their heads a long time ago to move us away from the system we have now for educating children and to have private schools and vouchers and everybody choose the kind of schools that they want. Did you see that as a goal some years ago, or is this catching you by surprise?
Oh, no, not at all. We've seen this coming. You know, Milwaukee is the center for voucher program, and to give a frame for this, there's 120,000 school-aged children in the city of Milwaukee, but only 80,000 are attending the Milwaukee Public Schools. And what is going to happen if these plans go forward? The size of the Milwaukee Public Schools will shrink, and we will be dealing with those students who have the greatest challenges and those who no one else want to deal with. And that's wrong. And that's one of the reasons that it is so important for everyone to stand up for public education, because I think you're standing up for the type of society that we want to live in.
The thing that I don't get about this, and I must tell the audience, I'm trained to be a teacher. I love teachers. I love schools. I've always loved schools. But it seems to me as though there's this anti-teacher sentiment that's very widespread right now. And I don't quite understand it, because we all have teachers who made us who we are. Teachers are, I don't want to be trite about this, but they are our children and our neighbors and people who I think we used to admire. What happened to that?
Well, I think it's been a very calculated campaign. No doubt about it. And it's very scary, to be honest with you. You wouldn't expect that teachers would become the object of ridicule and disgust, but we have seen this. We've seen it in the other media. We have seen it be part of a well-orchestrated campaign. And part of it is power politics, and part of it is a belief that private markets are the only thing that we should have. And it's very unfortunate.
But schools have been around, public schools, forever.
Right. I mean, that's one of the hallmarks of a democracy, is to have public education. You know, they said that public education is part of democracy. And I must say that the frightening thing is that I think there are powerful forces that are not comfortable with the democratic institutions that we have. And dismantling our unions, dismantling public education, and dismantling community organizations is part of an attempt to have greater power concentrated in the hands of a few.
You talked about the concessions that you have made. Is there, when you search your soul, any validity to the complaints that unions have held on for too long to really good benefits that other people don't get?
Well, what we have done is that, you know, I've bargained our contracts in the Milwaukee area for 20 years. So I've been at the bargaining table. Our approach always has been that we've looked at our total compensation. And what we have decided was that we went with a greater mix in terms of health care and pension and less with salary. So when you actually talk about the compensation, we talk about total compensation. And what we have decided, rather than taking salary, we took less salary and we put the money into quality health care. And that was the decision we made. Other in the private sector, the salaries are much higher, but the fringe benefit packages may be smaller. So it was calculated and a campaign of misinformation to talk about our fringe benefits as being out of line, because our total compensation for people with the same degree and the same type of work is much less.
And the average, I was reading in the New York Times, I think on Sunday there was an article about teachers, that the average salary in the country is $39,000 for teachers. I'm sorry, for that profession, that is not very much money.
I don't think it is. I mean, when you see our members, our young members graduate from college, $20,000, $30,000 in debt, starting salary around $35,000. And to increase to the top of the pay schedule, our members have to successfully complete at least 15 years of work on the job, have to have a master's degree plus an additional 32 graduate credits. So a great deal of time and effort and money out of our own members' pockets has to go to gaining first their bachelor's degree and then their master's and their advanced degrees to get to the top of the pay schedule. And the work is very demanding. It's very hard.
It is very demanding.
And our members are very good at what we do. And the real question is to get the top quality people that you want to have in the schools. You have to really understand the connection between the love of the work and also the ability to sustain your families on your income. It's no mistake that nearly one half of those people who go into teaching don't make it to 5 years. There's a very high turnover. So if people want to argue that the compensation is so great and the work is so easy, they'll need to explain why it's so difficult for our members to stay in the profession.
One of the things, Mike, that a lot of people concerned about right now is whether or not there will be a sufficient number of young people going into education, a significant number to replace teachers who eventually will retire. Do you have any statistics now about what's happening to the profession in terms of young people wanting to go into it?
I think young people want to go into it, and especially places like Milwaukee, because we have many young people that want to help, that want to make a difference. But right now what they're seeing, especially those in college, is that the right wing has been degrading our profession. Not only that, the message is that if you're going to work in this profession, you should be a member of the working poor. And we have to ask some very serious questions about the types of resources that we want to put into public education.
We welcome phone calls, and we'll take them in just one moment. Our guest this hour is Mike Langell. He is the president of the Milwaukee Teacher Education Association, a high school math teacher for how many years? 30, did you say?
Over 30.
Over 30 years. Congratulations,
thank
sir.
You.
Our number is 800-486-8655. I know we have many people in the education profession who listen to this program, and we will hear from a lot of you, so call in early. We're going to be jammed, I guarantee you that. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program today, Alice Walker, will be joining us. Alice is now living, I mean, she does a great deal of traveling, but she's living on a farm in Northern California, and she's written a book that's a series of essays. The Chicken Chronicles is the name of it. Alice Walker of the Color Purple fame will be joining us, hour number two. To your phone calls now, we start with Drew in Madison. Hello, Drew.
Hi. I feel like there's a bit too much momentum in the way that the public schools do things. So I like the idea of charter schools because they introduce ideas in ways that let us experiment with how we deliver education. But I really don't like the funding model for all the reasons that you outlined a little bit earlier. One of the more extreme charter schools is the nationally known KIPP schools. And I understand that not every charter school is like KIPP schools, but I don't really know of any charter schools in Milwaukee. I was hoping you could just go through a couple examples of charter schools that exist in Milwaukee to give us an idea of how they differ from public schools and how they differ from something like KIPP.
Sure. Charter schools in Milwaukee, you have two basic types. One of them are called instrumentality charters that are chartered by the Milwaukee Public Schools. And then you have non-instrumentality charters. And those are schools that are chartered by the city of Milwaukee, MATC, and UWM, for example. And one thing charter schools do is they are outside of some of the rules and regulations of the Department of Public Instruction. And so they are places where I don't necessarily think that you have greater innovations. And I'll give you an example. I worked for a number of years in an innovative small high school in the Milwaukee Public Schools. And this is part of the innovative school program. We were very free to form a school called New School for Community Service that offered internships and did things quite differently. So there is room for experimentation in the public school system. And Milwaukee really was a leader in this. So, and I think one of the things that's important to understand is in terms of the broad political sweep of things, there are many forces in the charter movement that are part of a plan to get rid of public education as an entity.
Thanks, Drew, for the call. Scott in Green Bay. Hi.
Good morning. I have a different thing. I have a couple of quick points. One is, if you look at the Organization for Cooperative Economic Development, which is an international organization, they did a great study, and there's only three countries that spend more money on primary education and five nations that spend more on secondary education in the United States. And our results, as we all know, aren't that good. So obviously just throwing money at a situation isn't always the best thing. That's number one. And number two is, part of the problem that I see is the dialogue. Like your guest was saying, you know, the right wing is trying to, you know, disparage our profession, and we divide people into these classes, which is really kind of irritating. Here's my position. I don't value teachers any more than I value the person that changes the oil on my car. And what I mean by that is I value everybody. And to give teachers this really unique, super special position causes division. I like teachers. I think teachers are great, but I don't think they're any really anything more special than anybody else. We need to somehow stop this division amongst groups where, you know, this group is very special and we should really treat them so much better than anybody else.
Mike.
Well, you know, I must say I've always loved being a teacher. I've never been more proud to be a teacher. And I think it's a calling and it is a great thing to do. And I don't think we think of ourselves as being better, but we love what we do. We care about our kids. We want a better world, and this is our way of doing that.
What about his comment concerning money? We do spend a lot of money, and look at our results. They're not good.
Well, you know, America has some deep problems that need to be solved. I've worked in many schools that had an awful lot of kids that struggled just to get three meals a day, and I realize that it's very difficult to make progress in those situations. And I'm hopeful that someday we'll live in a society where all children will have food on the table, a safe place to stay at night, and safe neighborhoods. And maybe that when we solve those problems, we'll be able to solve some of the problems we have in education also.
You know, in terms of respect for this profession, I respect everybody, too, in the jobs that they do. I don't think that teachers have been given due respect for quite some time now. They're bullied. I really think they've been bullied lately. I don't get it.
Well, you know, it's when you get into the mass media and some of the political pundits, it's It borders on ridicule and absolute disrespect for the profession. Mm-hmm. And what I have seen, just great, great people, caring people,
yes,
that have given everything for their students. And the discrepancy about what you hear in some aspects of the media and the reality in our schools, it's just very, very disappointing.
Thanks, Scott, for the call. Eugene and Viola, hi.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi, Eugene.
I started out better than 50 years ago when unions weren't around. And the scary part of this whole situation is at that time there weren't much for unions, and finally the unions came along, and they were well needed. Now, with the budget repair bill, what they'll be doing, what they'll be eliminating is that protection. If you have to make a controversial decision in a classroom, you need that protection to be able to back you up, and you won't have it. And another thing, with principals, they may not exactly like a teacher, and so they give them a short shift of everything. And I also saw the time when teachers could be hired above scale, and men got a better salary scale than women did. And I'm afraid with that this budget repair bill, they'll be eliminating the unions, and you'll be going right straight back to that. And that's just going to be hard on education all the way around.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. In many different schools, our members do have protections because they do stand up for our students. And we do stand up to make sure that there are adequate resources for our students, that they have fair textbooks and many other things like that. So, and it has not been that long ago. In fact, I was talking to a retired colleague just the other day where she said she was put off her job when she got pregnant. And it's not that long ago that that was part of the rules of the road. And in fact, if you go back through the history of unions, some of the very first organizing that went on, and primarily by women, was having the right to be married. And it used to be that if you were married, you were fired. And this is was bad in the past. And that's one of the things that we did. One of the main parts of our role as a union is providing a voice for our students at the bargaining table. And we have advocated for smaller class sizes. We have advocated for professional development and many of those things that are non-monetary in terms of what goes in our pockets. But the ability to have a voice, a professional voice, in how the education of our students moves forward is very important to us. And that's what unions do.
Thanks, Eugene. Catherine is next. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, I taught for a short while in northern Wisconsin, and I just wanted to speak to the disrespect and lack of appreciation for teachers. I taught Spanish, and I just felt the community wasn't in support. They asked me why I was teaching a language that the farmhands were speaking and all of this, and my district didn't support me and the foreign language program, and I'm just wondering where I could have gone to, you know, maybe at a higher level to get support for my program.
Right. You know, that's one of the things that we have done in our union is try to work with the Department of Public Instruction and with the universities to make sure that we have uniform education standards all across the state so that all children have access to things like foreign language, etc.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's talk about politics for a moment. There have been concerns that unions are a potent democratic force in this country. Have unions been too involved politically? Is that part of the problem?
No, I don't think so. I think that one of the things that we want to do is make sure that when you look at the quality of lives of our students, we want to be involved in the political process. We want to be able to say that the 8-hour workday is right. We want to be able to say that there should be nutrition programs for our students. We want to be able to say that there's affordable housing. We want to be able to say that there's a better jobs program for the parents of our students and nurses and health care and all those other issues. So we're advocates not only for our own members, but we're advocating for all the working families and for the quality of life of our students outside the schools. That's what our unions do, and that's why we want to be involved in the political process. We see our role that goes beyond the schools and into the communities. And what we want to do is we want to have make sure all our children can live lives free of poverty, free of crime, free of living in neighborhoods that have environmental degradation. So we're going to continue to be involved in the political process because our concern for our students go beyond the classroom and into their whole lives.
Let's go to Kathy in Waupaca. Hi, Kathy.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
supposedly public schools do not perform up to what we think they should. If we're really, really honest, we live in a culture that doesn't really value education. And let me clarify that by saying we pay lip service to it. We want everybody to get a good education. But the problem is, what do we call people who are intelligent and do well? They're nerds, they're geeks, they're, you know, these are unfavorable associations. And being too smart will make you unpopular in school. I've kind of found that out myself. It's, who gets the attention? Is it the student athlete or the one who's the National Merit Scholar? It's the schools are functioning in a society that, well, really doesn't, as I said, it really doesn't value education that much.
Well, you know, there are that definitely is a tendency, but also there are many people that do value education, and in particular our parents. You know, our parents want to have a better life for their kids. And you talk to our parents, and they want our schools to be funded. They want their children to have a chance of a better life and to be able to get employment where they can sustain themselves. And the unfortunate part is that our country is going in the opposite direction. And when you look at some of the policies of this current governor, it's as if they have been following a game plan that a generation ago they wanted to move the factories to the third world. And now they want to create a third world environment in Wisconsin so that they can have low wages and not worry about the social conditions of our citizens.
Thanks for the call. Emails have been coming in. This one from Jim. And if you would give us background here, please, too, about the number of public schools that are closing due to budget considerations and lack of students. Is there a danger in a provision to sell off public school buildings of making it impossible for public schools to be available in the future if needed so that private schools will permanently replace them? It seems many people haven't paid attention to this possibility.
Well, that's one of the great problems that we have here is that as they move students into the voucher programs, these schools become vacant, and then the pressure is to sell the schools. And then what you're doing is you are building a permanent structure for the private schools that they want to exist. And at the end of the day, public education will cease to be a right, but will be something that if you've got the money, you'll be able to afford it. And if you don't have the money, you won't be able to afford an education.
When you think, as you do much of the day, I'm sure, about education, and you think about a time when there was perhaps a golden age of education in this country, has there been such a time, and what were the circumstances that allowed that to happen?
I don't know if there really has ever been a golden age. I think public education has always been a battleground for the question of what type of world do we want to have, what type of society do we want to live in. Public schools have, on one hand, been a gateway, a place that anyone coming from any station in life can aspire to do better. But at the same time, there's been a lot of problems in our society that reflect themselves in the schools also. I mean, we've had segregated schools. Mm-hmm. We have had schools that have curriculum that hasn't been very progressive also. So I think it's schools have always have been a battleground. But I've been very proud of the better tendencies within the public school system to be democratic, to give everybody a shot at a better life. And so I think on balance, public education has been good, but it's had its problems too, and I think we have to face up to that.
Dave in Wisconsin Rapids, hi.
Good morning, Kathleen, and good morning to your guest. Just a quick comment on my mother was a teacher. I've had two sisters and a brother who were teachers. My granddaughter is studying at University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, now to be a teacher. And I've heard the horror stories over the years about some of the problems that kids bring to schools from dysfunctional families, much of which has to do with the economics. But my comment has to do with the actions of our governor. And sometimes they seem to be inexplicable and almost designed to damage our educational system. But if you look at one of his major financial supporters, David Koch, who ran on the Libertarian ticket some years ago as vice presidential candidate, and one of the planks in their platform is to do away with public schools completely. Now, that's kind of instructive as to perhaps some of the motivation of our governor. And it doesn't even take a paranoid to imagine a school system, say what's happening in Michigan now, for the school system to be farmed out to Koch Industries and let them set up an educational system so they can train consumers and worker bees to keep our economic system afloat. If that sounds paranoid, perhaps it is a little bit, but I don't believe it's too far-fetched.
Well, I think one of the big issues is that we are dedicated to educating all children, and there are other people that want to train individuals, train people to follow orders, and train people to have others think for them. I think the foundation of having a healthy democracy is having young people that go through a solid public school system where they appreciate the ability to be a critical thinker, to think for themselves, to debate the issues, and come up with their own conclusions.
It seems to me that no matter what your political persuasion, you're taking one heck of a huge risk by getting rid of a public school system in this country and going to a voucher program. We've had it in Milwaukee for some years now. There are very mixed reports about how successful. Many of the reports say parents are happy, but in terms of how students are doing, there's not a great improvement. They're not regulated so that we don't have a real clear grasp of what their scores are on tests. They are not required to take many of the same tests. What would make us want to take that, what I would perceive to be a risk?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. There doesn't seem to be a sound reason for doing that. And let me give you a good example. I've taught in the public schools, and every third Friday, it's 3 weeks into the beginning school year, once the number of these voucher schools get their money, they put these kids out, any kid that is a little bit of a handful for them. And those are some of the real problems that we face. You have to remember that these types of schools will choose the students they want. And when it comes to education, again, I just think that all human beings deserve a quality education. And all of our kids deserve that. And you will not get that by definition in a privatized system.
They put them out. You mean you've seen students then come to the schools in which you were teaching, the public schools, at the end of 3 weeks?
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's part of the way the process works. And even if they went to a program where they tested everybody, they would be much more selective in the types of students that they would even allow in. They would screen them beforehand. Those who they believe are good test takers and will have high scores will get in. Those who will not get good test scores will be put out. And then probably within 3 years, all of a sudden they'll come out and say, look, we have better test scores in these schools. Well, of course. You know, if I was teaching a class at one of our high schools and I could go through and pick all the ninth graders I wanted to teach, I would pick the ones that would give me the best test scores. Is that any proof of how the schools work? I don't think so.
Thanks, Dave, very much for your call. We go to Joseph in Melrose. Hi, Joseph.
Hey, how you doing today?
All right, how are you?
I'm not too bad. Hey, I wanted to address, I guess just to make things short, a couple fallacies that your guest is put on. I got a master's degree in international economics. I've studied a lot of the economics throughout the world, and Here's the deal. He made a nice fallacy statement that stated that when they were talking about the fact that we're of the top three most highly spending education systems in the world, his response was, well, you know, I have a lot of students that we have a lot of issues here in the United States that I have students that come to school that are needing to be fed, and they're not getting fed three times a day. And here's the deal. Statistics show that the United States has the highest, the best-fed population in the world. That explains one-third. One-third of our own population is obese. Now, I'm not saying that all students get fed the same, and I'm not saying that students do not have the same problems, but the problem is we will sit there and blame the fact that, well, you know, there's problems here. That's happening throughout the world. The United States is the greatest country in the world and everybody wants to come to it for a reason. So you can't sit there and say, well, it's because we got problems. No, our problem is the system is broke. And it's a fallacy to sit there and blame it.
What, the school system is broke, Joseph? Bring it back to schools. The school system is broke?
The school system is broke.
All right, Mike.
Well, you know, I think one of the problems that the listener has talked about is the difficulty when you start comparing what happens in the third world, where maybe only one out of 20 or 30 people are allowed to even go to a school. There are many difficulties that our students face. And having taught in the Milwaukee Public Schools, I'm just very proud that I was able to work with students and move them forward. And until you are in a situation where you're working with young people that have gone through some very difficult times, I think it's difficult to appreciate how much work it takes to move people forward.
Here's an email from a Brownsville listener. I am a teacher, non-public school, with 30-plus years of experience. I've been following the situation with MPS. I see the problem with attitude toward teachers as twofold. Number one, the No Child Left Behind initiative has basically been a failure. So many schools don't measure up to the standards and are deemed a failure in the eyes of the public. So it's teachers who are blamed for this. And number two, teachers need to make a decent living wage, but the general public sees teachers as being greedy. The public doesn't feel that we should reward teachers with higher salaries when schools are failing.
Well, I think that's one of the things that are being put forward is that we will get a better quality teacher by lowering the salaries and lowering the compensation. And I don't know what other profession you want to go to and say that that's going to be a solution for increasing the quality of the workforce.
We pause for just a moment and return and take more of your phone calls. Mike Langiel is our guest this hour. He is president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. We are talking about, well, looking at education generally, but our conversation prompted by news that nearly 1,000 full-time staff positions in the Milwaukee Public Schools, mostly teaching and teacher coach jobs, would be eliminated under the 2012 budget that was proposed on Tuesday. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Here's our number again. We've been real busy with calls, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Alice Walker, our guest, our number two. She has a new book, a series of essays, The Chicken Chronicles. Mary is next in West Bend. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thank you so much for your guest and for his insights into our educational system. We just got back from traveling out west where an operational referendum passed in one of the larger cities in Montana. And a really interesting comment that was made in their paper is, education is an investment. It is not an expense. And I think that really gets to the heart of so many of the problems that we have today, because people look at it as, this is something I'm going to have to purchase, but really you're investing in the future, not only of our kids today, but also of the future generations. And I want to thank you again, and I'm going to take any comments off the air.
Thanks for the call.
Well, that's one of the things that we talk about in general around our state. You know, the working families of Wisconsin produce about $240 billion worth of wealth. And a lot of that money is concentrated on the absolute top strata of society. And the real question before us and before the governor is, do you want that money to be shipped out of state to Wall Street into foreign markets? Or how much of that money do you want to reinvest in the state of Wisconsin? And that's really what the role of government is. This wealth is created by the working people of Wisconsin, and we need to have control over how much we want to reinvest to keep our society vibrant. And right now, that's what the big fight is about. And right now, the governor's aim, in my view, is to ship that money back to Wall Street. And we say, let's invest it in our children.
Here's an email from George in Shorewood. Do you agree with many teachers that there's still a lot of fat at MPS's central office? If so, what areas should be cut back or eliminated there?
I think they've cut back just about everything that they can. I think the real issue right now is that we have close to a $200 million cut in the Milwaukee Public Schools. I just do not know how we're going to be able to maintain the levels of education that people would want us to have. And it seems like we're on this spiral that they're going to keep cutting, and then the test scores are lower, and then they'll say, oh, we'll show you, we'll cut even more. Okay, and that's unfortunate.
What's going to change things for you?
What we have to remember is that the majority of Wisconsinites are in favor of public education, are in favor of having a higher quality state. And in this past election, out of every four voting age adults, one voted Republican, one voted Democrat, and two did not vote. People are going to have to get engaged and involved in the democratic process, because the future of our state is at risk right now. And you can see how it's being played off in the public schools and many other areas.
Sarah is next in Zion. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Kathleen. This is so interesting. I wanted to call in after I heard your guest talk about the motivation of Republicans wanting to be to consolidate power in the hands of a few. And I took a sociology class recently, and the teacher there talked about this a little bit. And she was talking about the No Child Left Behind Act and how that was a good example of, like, Republican doublespeak, where they label their bill the opposite of what they want to do, and that the purpose of they wanted No Child Left Behind to fail so that it would help to destroy public education for the purposes of preventing people in the underclasses the opportunity to move up. And so I just wonder if your guest has any comment on that.
Well, certainly, No Child Left Behind has been put in place, and it is designed to fail, because basically what it says is we want all your students to be above average. So you test all your students, and if your average is 80, they want all the students to be above 80. But by definition, everyone cannot be above average. And as this process goes through, I think it's by the year 2016, every school in America will be a failing school under the No Child Left Behind. And it was very cynical politics that got it in place. And unfortunately, it is something that we're trying to work through. I think one of the big dangers is that there's such a fixation on immediate testing and test results that the real quality education is being left on the wayside. And that's too bad, because when you focus simply on what you need to do in the very short run to get a better test score, you lose the ability to have a deeper and richer education.
Thank you, Sarah. Sharon is, It's Scott in Lake Mills. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I wanted to back up your guest on something he said with his experience in teaching, where children were coming to school who weren't being taken care of at home, or they, you know, weren't in a safe environment, they weren't getting enough to eat. I have some experience working as a paraeducator, a volunteer paraeducator in the public school system in Lake Mills. And I saw firsthand, you know, kids that were eating hot lunch, and the people serving the lunch, you know, were pointing out, you know, several kids in a lunch period, you know, you let them come up as many times as they want because they're not getting fed at home, you know, and just hearing about some of the stories, you know, of what was happening at home with these children. And I live in a small town, and there's, you know, a fair amount of affluence in my town, but there's also, you know, there's problems there. And I can appreciate what the previous caller was saying about, you know, us being a obese nation, or a third of us being obese, though. You know, there are a lot of statistics that kind of will show you whatever you want. You know, and I appreciate the guest's experience, you know, seeing firsthand what happens. And I think, you know, once you've worked with kids, as he said, you really see what's going on. You know, you can't really hear about it and understand, per se. So that's all I wanted to say, and I'll take my comments off the air.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that may get lost in this is the tremendous resiliency of the young people. I mean, a lot of times there's this, you think about the trials and tribulations of young people, but there are many, many that make it through. And sometimes you just do not understand how they have the internal fortitude, the strength, whatever it is, it takes when you understand their home life, how they make it to school. Some of the students I've worked with, you feel like they deserve a medal just walking in the door in the morning, because what they did is after they got done with their homework, they washed their younger brothers or sisters' clothes in the bathtub, hung it out to dry, got them up, found food to feed them, got them off to their school, got to their school, and were parents for younger brothers and sisters, and then their school day started. And there are many of our students that make it through successfully having to deal with this. What I have to just say is that on the whole, there are so many children in all corners of our state that are living in conditions that cannot be justified in a truly humanistic society. And we have to come to terms with that, and we've got to figure out how we're going to husband our resources for all kids and all people in our state. And it's just morally wrong to have the power and the wealth being concentrated within the hands of a few.
We go to Sharon next. Hello, Sharon.
Good morning.
Hi.
It's a great show. I heard you talking earlier about women who got lower salaries and got substitute wages, even though they were the breadwinner because they were divorced. I lived in that. That's when I was in school, and one of our high school teachers told us about that. And we had classmates in class whose mothers were those kinds of teachers. And I had some wonderful teachers in my little school who had to drive to my town because their hometown would treat them like that. But my point that I wanted to make, and I haven't heard you talk about this, schools and education. I'm up here in the tall pines and the lakes and the fishing and the good old boys. And if you want to get out of this atmosphere and make have a career that's greater than what we have to offer here, you have to go to school, and your school has to provide that for you. It's the caretaker of our children. It's where the teachers and the cooks notice that some children are hungrier than others because they know they're not getting fed. And this goes all the way to our legislature and our Congress. Our schools are preparing our future leaders. And as the schools go, so goes our leadership. And I'm afraid that we have already seen an example of that in our state house.
Mike.
Well, there's little to add to that. And I think that's the practical experience of everyday people seeing the real value of public education.
Thank you for the call. Here's an email with a different point of view from Diane. Our school system has early release on Friday once a month. The Wausau area schools where my grandchildren go have movie and popcorn day once a month. They recently watched Toy Story 3. No wonder, that's silly, I'd like to see that movie. No wonder our public schools are falling behind. All the teachers cry about is their pay and benefits. We had 40 to 50 kids in our classes when I was growing up, and we learned.
Well, I'm going to tell you that there is a time and place for all things under the sun. And in schools, I think it's very important to get down to the important work of academics. But every now and then, it's important to have some fun, too. And I think one of the great things that I got out of my public school education was being able to have contact with art and music and other things that I don't know if I would have had real access to. So I'm such a believer in public education because I don't think without it I would have been able to go to college or be able to have a wonderful career as a public school teacher.
Mike in South Milwaukee, hi.
Good morning. Boy, this is a depressing program, and I'm afraid I'm going to add to the depression. There's a great book called The Cities and the Wealth of Nations by Jane Jacobs, who is a Canadian social historian. And what I see happening with Milwaukee City Schools is not just the destruction of the Milwaukee City Schools, but the destruction of the city of Milwaukee. I lived in Cleveland 20 years ago. If you want to see what Milwaukee is going to be like in a few years, go to Cleveland. And if you want to see what Milwaukee is going to be like in a decade, go to Detroit. And if you want to see the future of Milwaukee, just go to 35th and Beleet, in the area around there, and witness the poverty. This assault on the city schools of Milwaukee is going to destroy the city of Milwaukee. And as Milwaukee goes the state of Wisconsin.
Mike, we have about 30 seconds.
Doesn't have to be that way. The future isn't determined, and we are determined as educators to build a better future. Everything that we do is looking at our students and building a life for them. And we refuse to accept that vision of our city and our state. We know we can have a better state, and we will have a better state, and we are going to come out because this is who we are as people.
And in the short term, are you worried about what's going to happen the next few years with education, or do you feel that you can change the course?
I'm worried. Every night I wake up worried, but every morning I wake up with great enthusiasm. We have wonderful students. Their parents are great people. The citizens of Wisconsin are great people. I was up at Madison, and it was a beautiful experience. And we do not have to accept the future that some people have planned. We are a better state than that.
Thank you, Mike, for being with us. Mike Langell, he is president of the Milwaukee Teacher Education Association. Our conversation prompted by news this week that nearly 1,000 full-time positions, mostly teachers from MPS, will be gone under the 2012 budget. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing this hour, and thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production in our downtown Milwaukee studios. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return with another hour of conversation. Alice Walker is going to join us the next hour. Thanks for listening to this one.